WFAE streaming is sponsored by Corporate Information Technologies, a local IT company assisting business and taking a proactive approach to technology. CIT, let us show you how good IT can be. corp-infotech.com.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Over the years, we've made a habit of visiting with the president of almost every institution of higher learning in the area, and today we pay another of those visits. In May of 2011, Davidson College welcomed a new president to campus. Dr. Carol Quillen became the school's 18th leader and the first since 1957 to not have been an alumnus. Prior to her arrival, she was at Rice University in Houston. A former history teacher, she brings strong opinions about the role of a liberal arts education to Davidson, a school renowned for the liberal arts background it instills in its students. Now that Dr. Quillen has had some time to settle in, she joins us for the hour to talk about the value of a liberal arts education in a global economy and more. Welcome to Charlotte. Welcome to the program. Nice to meet you.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here. I appreciate the invitation. It's always a pleasure to come into Charlotte.
Yes, this is kind of Davidson week for us because yesterday we had Bishop Spong on from the studios of WDAV, your campus radio station up there.
That's right.
I should have driven up there. You have beautiful studios. You have been at Davidson for about 14 months now, if I've done the math correctly, and about 21 years you spent at Rice University. And until you came to Davidson, Rice was the only academic institution at which you had ever worked. Is that correct?
That's correct. My father would tell you it's the only job I've ever actually gotten in my life. So,
well, you got this one.
That's right.
So has this been a good move for you? It must have been a difficult decision to make.
It was a difficult decision. But Davidson is a wonderful place. And over the process of the search, I fell in love with the community and with the aspirations of Davidson. And North Carolina has been very welcoming. Charlotte is a huge asset mm-hmm. for Davidson. Most liberal arts colleges are not located so close to a thriving and vibrant and welcoming city.
Why not?
That's a good question. I think, and I don't actually know the answer, but mm-hmm. they seem to be located in more rural or remote areas. And I'm not really sure why that is. Mm-hmm. There are some schools located close to Los Angeles, but Los Angeles is so big that it's difficult for one school to find an opening into the city.
Right.
Davidson, we have a number of alumni in Charlotte. Charlotte has been extremely welcoming to me. We see a lot of creative opportunities for partnerships with the city in the arts and with the other great universities and colleges that are here. So the mayor of Charlotte is a Davidson grad and a member of our board. So I see a lot of opportunities for our students to build bridges between how they learn and how they live. Mm-hmm. And that's an important part of making the case for the relevance and value of a liberal arts education today.
The search committee for a replacement for your predecessor, who went on to be the head of the UNC system, whom we had on this program when he became the president of Davidson, the search committee went out and looked at, I think, 100 different candidates for your job and decided on you. They came to you. One of the consultants working with them came to you and suggested what, that you apply, or it came to you and said, we have an opening, would you be interested? How does that work?
Yes, search firms develop relationships with faculty and administrators at colleges and universities around the country. And as they get to know institutions and candidates, they often identify candidates they think would be a good fit for a particular position. And so I had a conversation with a search consultant, and she suggested that I look at Davidson. And my daughter was a senior in high school, and it was possible for me to consider moving. I knew about Davidson's amazing academic reputation ever since I myself had been in high school and looking
really?
At colleges.
Because it's a small school. What is it, 1,700 students at the moment?
It's a little bit bigger than that.
Okay.
We'll cap out about 2,000.
What kind of a reputation does it have among academics around the country?
It has a great reputation for academic rigor, and it's one of the very few places where really great students can play Division I sports at that level and also get an amazing liberal arts education.
We're going to talk about that Division I thing a little bit later on, I think. At Rice, you were vice president of international and interdisciplinary initiatives after being a member of the history faculty. Why the move from teaching to administration? What attracted you out of the classroom and into a different kind of position?
Academic administration at Rice, which was a place that gave me a lot of opportunity, was very seductive. You know, it seemed like an opportunity to make a lasting difference for an institution and therefore to have a greater impact than one could have as a classroom professor. For most of my time at Rice, I continued to teach. Mm-hmm. I love students. I love the classroom. I feel like it's important as an academic to continue to do that for a variety of reasons, to keep in touch with what's going on in the classroom and to understand your colleagues and the faculty that you work with. But when you have an opportunity to build a program that will outlast you and be there long after you've left an institution, that can be sort of seductive when you love the institution where you work.
Yeah.
And Rice was really good to me and gave me opportunities to teach a wide range of subjects and to interact with great students and to learn from amazing colleagues and mentors.
Have you taught any history classes at Davidson?
I haven't figured out how to do it yet in my current role, but I do engage students around substantive intellectual questions. So I tend to do it through discussion groups.
When you teach a subject like history, which I suppose changes if you're teaching contemporary history, but if you're teaching, what was your area of expertise? What was your concentration?
I was trained as a European intellectual historian.
Okay.
So I studied European intellectual history from the early modern period through the present, and I was mostly interested in how one age understands the cultural production of a distant age. So first, the Renaissance, mm-hmm. which got very interested in classical antiquity, and then contemporary society's interest in pre-modern societies.
Okay, so things do change in that discipline, I would think, thought processes and
Oh, yeah, every age has to interpret its own past.
But I was curious about what, given your interest in history, how getting back in touch with what's going on in the classroom would change. How does that change at the college level? Because it seems to me that college teachers or professors have been doing pretty much the same thing for millennia.
I think both what we teach and how we teach changes dramatically.
Okay.
I will say that most college professors and university professors go into it because they love to learn, not so much because they love to teach exactly, but because they love to learn. And so what college professors want to do is share their love of learning with really smart students. And so the classroom is always highly dependent on the other people in the room. And the concerns that the students bring to the study of the past animate the discussion and how and they animate and shape the interpretation of the past that you produce together in that classroom. So my interest in history was driven by what for me is an ethical imperative. You know, what does it mean to lead an ethical life when people believe such different things about what's right and wrong?
Hmm.
And my study of the past is my way of trying to think through that question. And so I would ask my students, so what matters to you? What are you afraid of? What do you want to accomplish in your life? And how can we use our investigation of the past and the production of knowledge that we're going to engage in together? How can we use that to help you answer or begin to think about the questions that matter the most deeply to you?
How does the present influence the past? I wasn't going to get into this, but because you teach history and when you have discussions with students who are obviously influenced by what's happening in their lives today and what's happening in the world around them today, and they do have specific points of view about what's going on politically and socially, etc. How does that influence how they look back? They have to bring their modern preconceived notions to the table.
Absolutely, and that's good. I can give you an example of that from my own discipline, which is history.
Mm-hmm.
And this speaks to why I'm such a passionate advocate for heterogeneity in any college population. When most interpreters of the U.S. past were from similar backgrounds, had gone to similar schools, they asked the same questions about the U.S. past, and therefore their blind spots were the same. And it wasn't until women and African Americans and first-generation college students and those who had been excluded from most universities in this country began to investigate the past and ask different questions that we produced more accurate narratives about the past. So nobody asked about slave culture. People thought there was no such thing as slave culture until people like Eugene Genovese wrote these books that said, yes, there is. Roll, Jordan, Roll is a book about slave culture. My mentor in college at the University of Chicago told me there was no such thing as women's history, which is a kind of a hard statement to parse even today.
But was that person saying that because there were no books about it, there were no courses about it, there was no writing about it, or did he or she really mean there is no history?
The presumption was that the history of women had simply not changed enough to be worth investigating. And so it was the same presumption about the rich culture that was created in African American communities, slave and free, mm-hmm. in this country, that it wasn't sufficiently worthy. It wasn't worthy of study. I think that was the presumption, and that is just really wrong. So a heterogeneous body of inquirers mm-hmm. produces better knowledge, at least in the disciplines I know the best. And you could make the same argument in biology. When I taught women's history, after being told it didn't exist by my mentor, the person from whom I learned more than anyone, I would assign my kids an article from the 19th century from The Lancet, which argued that you couldn't have men and women educated together, because if women were educated with men, the blood would be diverted from their uterus to their brains, and they'd lose their capacity to have children. Mm. Written by a doctor, you know. Okay, well, so that's ridiculous. But until there are other people investigating those questions, it's hard to get at a more accurate representation of the truth.
Well, there's some ridiculous things being said about things like that in the political campaign right now, as a matter of fact. When you talk about history, and I wasn't going to talk about history at all, but when you talk about history, history is written through the eyes of the victors, in particularly when it involves conflict. You don't hear a lot about the other side of a certain conflict, and we're still having arguments in this country over what the Civil War was all about. So when you face a classroom full of students and they start asking questions about what they've read and what you've taught, how do you know? How do you get to the kernel of the truth? How do we know what the truth about history is?
So every generation reinterprets the past in the light of its own questions. And it's through those progressive and very different investigations that we arrive at ever more accurate representations of the past. I don't think we will ever have confidence that we figured it out. You know, what were the causes of the French Revolution? Why did people fight the Civil War? These are questions that will continue to be asked with each generation. And each generation will see new things in the historical record because of what's going on in the present. So in the light of the Vietnam War, for example, I think American historians looked at the U.S. past very differently than they did prior to the Vietnam War. And the civil rights movement has shaped how we think about the U.S. past. And while it is true that it's easier to find information written by the victors in any conflict, it's possible to recover the experience of the vanquished if you know where to look. And I think we're increasingly interested in the experience of people who didn't win. There are a lot more history books and narratives, for example, about the Native American populations, the Aztecs, for example, than we thought we would ever. We know more about that society and that culture than we thought we would ever know. And so each generation, I think, shapes interpretations of the past in the light of its concerns.
We're getting a little example here of a liberal arts education and how it works, I think, this morning with Dr. Carol Quillen, who's the president of Davidson College. She's been on the job for about 14 months. And we're going to talk about the value of a liberal arts education and why it matters in a global economy and in a culture that is so focused on using an education as a stepping stone to a paycheck. We'll do that when we come back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and British American School of Charlotte, with an international personalized curriculum for children starting at age 2, hosting an open house Thursday from 6 to 7:30 p.m. Details at britishschooloftcharlotte.org. And from Nexon Pruitt, 190 lawyers helping companies meet business challenges in court and at the deal table from Charlotte and 7 other Carolina locations. Next challenge, next level, Nexon Pruitt. Well, on Halloween, we bring you vital information, survival information. What do you need to know on the day when ghosts abound and things go bump in the night? We welcome some real-life Ghostbusters to the program, members of the Carolina Paranormal Society, and we'll take a closer look at the culture of this holiday, especially the rise in Halloween costumes, not just for kids. That's tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, omega-3 fish oil supplements are widely thought to help prevent a variety of ailments like heart disease, Alzheimer's, and depression. Assessing the health benefits of an omega-3-rich diet.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks, here on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Dr. Carol Quillen is our guest. She's the president of Davidson College. Every once in a while, we visit with the presidents of our institutions of higher learning around town to get their take on what's going on in their academic world and how they relate to the city of Charlotte. You came from Rice University in Houston, which is an enormous city. I've only been to Houston once, but I just couldn't get over how big it was. Unbelievably big. I mean, they say everything in Texas is big, but this is unbelievably big. They had 6,000 students, undergraduates and graduate students at Rice, and you have a little more than 1,700 students at Davidson College. So it's a much smaller institution in terms of size and feel. What are the advantages and disadvantages for a student to choose a Davidson College over University of North Carolina or a Duke or a Rice?
That's a very good question. My daughter's a sophomore at UNC Chapel Hill. I think these are very individual decisions. Davidson is a place that offers students an opportunity to develop very talented students. It's hard to get into Davidson, mm-hmm. and Davidson is an academically rigorous place. So students who are talented and disciplined who come to us come, I think, because they want to develop deep talents and capacities that will serve them whatever they choose to do. So analytical rigor, the capacity to see problems from multiple perspectives, an ability to write and speak clearly, a capacity to work collaboratively across disciplines, and an opportunity in a residential environment like Davidson to build bridges between how they learn and how they live. And while Davidson will only ever educate a small number of individuals, those individuals leave Davidson and have a disproportionate impact for good in the world. And I think that's because the extraordinary culture of Davidson, and I believe this is specific to Davidson, ask students to develop their talents and to understand their own passions and commitments in light of what the world needs from them. And so the whole environment is geared towards helping students figure out what they're good at, what kind of lives they wish to lead, and how they're going to leave an impact on the world for the better. And I think that's what pulled me in. I mean, I fell in love with that community when I met the search committee, people who probably didn't agree on much, but who shared this passionate commitment to making the world better and this kind of rare moral courage in a world where people worry so much about perception. Mm-hmm. I just thought that's a remarkable place to be, and I want to be the person that Davidson would ask me to be.
If you are a high school student today, or you're the parent of a high school student today. You said that it's difficult to get into Davidson, and it sounds like it attracts a particular kind of student. How would you self-identify? What if you were thinking about colleges, going to college in the next 2 or 3 years, how would you identify yourself as a good candidate for Davidson?
So I think the first thing is to start with the primary purpose of any institution. So Davidson has a very clear primary purpose. Our purpose is to assist students in developing humane instincts, disciplined and creative minds for lives of leadership and service. So the first question is that what you want? And then secondary to that, one would ask, is a liberal arts philosophy what you want? So a liberal arts education focuses very much on talents and capacities rather than on specific subjects. Mm-hmm. It spans the arts and sciences. We have a lot of great courses of study at Davidson, but our emphasis is always going to be on developing, you know, analytical rigor, clarity of expression, creativity, leadership, resilience, self-discipline, and ability to translate insights from one arena into another, and ability to tackle unprecedented problems. And for that reason, our curriculum is very much based on students doing original work, students doing original research, students doing original creative work, students solving real problems. And when I spoke about teaching in a liberal arts classroom, where what happens in the class is very dependent on who's in the room, that requires small classes and bright students. Yeah. And you can only have that at a pretty small place.
Since I started looking for colleges, colleges started to become places to go to get a job at the end of the 4 years or the 6 years or whatever it was you were going to spend time there doing. And we've heard a lot about the importance of education during this presidential campaign. We've heard a lot about educating people for the jobs of the 21st century in a global economy. And we've heard about a lot about the cost of higher education and how it's become untenable for most people. And is college really worth it? And I want to talk about all of those things. But let's begin by talking about liberal arts, because liberal arts, as you have said, is not job specific. It's horizon broadening. And it is what college and universities were intended to be at their inception. Is that true?
I think that's true of many schools, yes.
But I mean, back in the day, when people studied, as you still do, Latin and Greek at Davidson, when people went from these upper income families, and that's who went to college back then, they went to read the learned writers of the period and classical writers and just understand the world and the history of the world and the development of our culture. They didn't go so that they could sit on Wall Street and make money.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that's true. And that, you know, obviously the origin of the expression is study that's worthy of free people, mm-hmm. which, you know, is a classical notion. And so it has never been a conception of education that was career related or career specific, though I would argue that particularly in today's job market, where the average person changes not only jobs but careers several times, it's very important to have developed talents and capacities and not to focus exclusively on specific bodies of knowledge, because what you need to know will change. However, your ability to analyze problems from multiple perspectives, your ability to speak clearly and persuasively, your ability to deal with empathy with people who are different, mm-hmm. all of those things are lasting talents that will serve you well no matter what you choose to do. So I would actually argue that given the volatility of the global economy, for talented, dedicated, disciplined people, a liberal arts education is actually better than a very targeted education.
That makes a lot of sense to me, but you have said that you want to promote Davidson's liberal arts values to an increasingly skeptical public. Why are they increasingly skeptical?
I think that's because we talk publicly in the national conversation about higher education as if it were undifferentiated, as if a bachelor's degree from one place mm-hmm. was equivalent to a bachelor's degree from another place. We talk about going to college. Well, the higher education market is increasingly differentiated. Different institutions offer very different experiences, and frankly, some are really worth it and some are not. And as the public becomes more educated about the opportunities presented by higher education, and as online opportunities and specific opportunities for credentialing that aren't based on seat time or residential presence, as all that becomes more available, people will have more choices. And many of those choices will be significantly less expensive than a conventional four-year residential college. And that choice will be great for the country, right? So if you want to get trained for a specific job that's becoming available in your neighborhood, there will be opportunities to do that as quickly and as inexpensively as possible, right? If you're a returning war veteran and you want to be trained for a different kind of opportunity, we need to make sure that there are great opportunities available for that as well. So as people become more informed about the range of choices that they have, I think the national conversation will become more nuanced. I have never in my 14 months, no Davidson graduate has said to me, my Davidson education wasn't worth what it cost. When you have our retention rate, our graduation rate, an effective student loan default rate of zero, and a very high unemployment rate 6 months after graduation, people are happy. Mm-hmm. And 64% of our alumni give back.
Are employers, industries, captains of industry, presidents of banks, et cetera, are they on the same page with you about the value of a liberal arts education?
I think we have to do more at Davidson to help our students move from the liberal arts environment to impact for good in the world. So we have a new set of programs called Transition to Impact programs, and we're very focused on ensuring that our students have opportunities to apply what they learn while they're still in school. So our amazing career services office has added well over 100 internship opportunities for our students. We are ramping up certain opportunities for our students to spend time internationally. Over 85% of them do now, but mm-hmm. to spend time internationally to develop experiences there. We have a new postgraduate fellowship program that's modeled a little bit on Teach for America that will partner our students with a nonprofit organization so that they can apply what they've learned at Davidson in real world context. So I think, yes, we have to take more responsibility for moving our students from our environment into the world. And that means making sure that they're ready for their interviews if they choose to go to Wall Street, making sure that they've had the financial and economic background that they need to be competitive for those jobs right out of the gate.
Because when you talk about preparing students for leadership positions and service to their communities, that sounds very altruistic. At some place, real life enters into a person's life. You can sit there in the ivory tower for 4 years and learn about how to do all these things. You've got to figure out how to do it once you get out in the real world. Davidson does prepare students for that. Then that's what you're saying.
I think it's on us to do that. And I would point to our alumni. For us, leadership and service are linked. And you can lead and serve in a variety of ways. We have no presumption that the only way to do that is through community service. We have a lot of CEO graduates who have served the world by creating jobs and economic development in their communities. We have folks who've worked in investment banking on Wall Street who've also started very powerful nonprofit organizations to address issues of global health. We have graduates who've started microfinance organizations that both make money and lend money to undocumented and poor folks who wouldn't have any opportunity otherwise. So I think our graduates creatively serve through leading in a variety of sectors.
Put your headphones on. We'll take a phone call here. Our number is 704-926-WFAE. That's 704-926-9323, 800-603-WFAE, or every other way you can do it on WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks. John in Charlotte, welcome to the program.
Hello. I wanted to comment twofold. One, I remember when we discussed the academics of learning something. When I was getting my undergraduate degree, I was told point blank that it wasn't so much that I was there to learn a skill or a trait, more the fact that I was there to learn how to learn. And I think that's the biggest asset that you get from a broadened liberal arts education is that you don't go to learn to become an accountant. You learn to learn how to expand your mind and to learn things. And that became even more true to me when I went in the Navy, and here you have pilots flying multi-million-dollar aircraft who have degrees in everything from English to history to science. And I just thought that was what astounded me about education.
I think that's a great insight, and I would agree completely with you that the kind of loving the sharing of our love to learn as faculty, that's, I think, our aim. We want to share our love of learning with the students who enter our classrooms, and precisely for the reasons that you say, because then no matter what you need to learn, whatever situation you find yourself in, you'll be able to learn what you need to learn to be helpful and successful and effective. And that's way more important than mastering a particular body of knowledge when that body of knowledge is likely to become increasingly obsolete pretty quickly.
Same reason you don't have to memorize stuff because it's on Google. You can always find out the stuff you need to know.
Well, I think access to information is becoming increasingly easy, so yeah. Analyzing the information is now really pretty important.
John, thank you for your call. Let me go to Joyce in Charlotte. Joyce, welcome.
Hi, good morning. I have a son who also is attending UNC Chapel Hill. He's a freshman. He was accepted at Davidson, but we are a middle-class family. We don't qualify for financial aid, and the cost of Davidson was just prohibitive. When we looked at what his student loans would be. And I know Davidson, talks about how they have, a no student loan. But in terms of our family contribution, we told him what we could pay based on a public school education, that's what we could contribute as a family, not looking at what the FAFSA said we could, and the rest it would be up to him. And it's just a really expensive education. How can you make that more affordable for middle-class families who don't qualify for financial aid?
We're really mindful of the bind of the middle class and for people who don't qualify for financial aid by conventional formulas. And so we're actually looking at ways of creating particular scholarship programs that are aimed at the middle class, aimed at people like you who've saved money for college and who deserve to have all of the options that both very wealthy families have and also families who qualify easily for financial aid have. So,
because it costs, what, about $30,000 a year?
All in, it's like $50,000
$50,000, that's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money.
So, and yet your students don't leave college with massive amounts of student debt. How is that possible?
It's, let me say that our finance, here's the Davidson Trust promise. We want to make it possible for every talented student who wants to come to Davidson to afford it. So our financial aid, we're need blind in admissions, we meet financial need, and we meet it with no loans in the packages. That said, there are an enormous number of families for whom what we would expect them to be able to pay is a lot of money. And so we are working on ways of accommodating those families. Financial aid is complicated, but we do believe that we make it possible for kids who are admitted to come to Davidson. Some of our students choose to take out loans, so it's not it's not true that all students graduate from Davidson without loans. Many choose to take out loans. If they do, they pay them back.
We have had this national conversation about the incredible expense of going to certain institutions of higher learning if you don't go to a public university. And kids leave school now with $250,000 in debt if they financed it on a student loan in some cases. Maybe not at Davidson, but at other institutions. And this is money that will be hanging over their heads for most of their working lives, which has provoked the question, is a college education really worth it? Because you may not ever make the money back that you are putting out for that education. I'm not going to ask you to answer that question now because we have to take a break, but I think we'll try to get an answer on the other side. With Dr. Carol Quillen, president of Davidson College, our guest today on Charlotte Talks here on WFAE. We're coming right back. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members at Bilo Supermarket, serving the Southeast for over 50 years, featuring Gold Star, Meats, Walters, Fresh Produce, and the Bilo Bonus Card. Store locator and fuel perks. Program details at buy-low.com. Omega-3 fish oil supplements are widely thought to help prevent a variety of ailments, including heart disease, Alzheimer's, and depression. Assessing the health benefits of an omega-3 rich diet, the topic of the conversation at 10 in 20 minutes on The Diane Rehm Show. If you'd like to join our conversation with Dr. Carol Cullen, president of Davidson College, 704-926-WFAE. That's 704-926-9323, 800-603-WFAE, or online at WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks. We're coming right back.
Hi, this is Steve Inskeep. While you've been sleeping, the Morning Edition team has been awake, asking questions to which you want answers, getting the latest news that affects your life. So when you wake up ready to feed your curiosity, Morning Edition will help you start your day right. Tune in weekdays. Breakfast for your brain.
I'm Duncan McFadden. Join me for Morning Edition weekdays from 5 till 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Dr. Carol Quillen's our guest, president of Davidson College, and we've gotten to the key question of the hour, and that is, given the incredible expense of many college educations, particularly when students have to go into debt to achieve those educations, and that debt stays with them for a significant portion of their working lives, is it worth it? It's a question that's come up in this presidential campaign. Is it?
I think that really depends on where you go and the value of the degree that you get when you graduate.
Can you know that before you go?
Yes, I think you can. I think you can. I think you can look at things like freshman retention rate, graduation rate, post-graduation employment rates, the debt burden of graduates, alumni satisfaction, parent satisfaction, the value of the degree.
Well, you taught history, so you dealt with a lot of students who left college with a degree in history. Many go to college and leave with a degree in English, and they become the butt of jokes because what are you going to do with that? But you're saying that if you get the right kind of education, whether it's in history or English or Spanish or some other non-job track related degree, you can use those skills well in a job.
Sure. I think our caller, John, was evidence of that, right? He spoke of the English majors and the history majors who he met flying planes. And I believe that we need to take responsibility for making sure that our students have the preparation they need to get a job right out of the gate, in addition to preparing them for lives of leadership and service. We need to give them the skills they need to get the job right out of the gate. And we're doing that. I think that different schools are doing that differently. I do believe that technology will increasingly make possible very, very inexpensive, very, very high quality job training and credentialing and higher education of certain type.
Are you talking about online?
Yes.
Education? Is Davidson going to embark on any of that on their own, online courses for students who can sit in a classroom or in their home, in their bedroom in Saudi Arabia and be a student at Davidson?
I don't know. I do know that the technological advance is making it possible for us to improve, no matter where, even at Davidson, to improve how we deliver education and the opportunities we make possible for students.
Can you get the same kind of quality education in an online setting as you can in a classroom where you can have this interactive give and take, this dialogue with the professor? Can it be as good?
Online delivery will never replace what we do at Davidson. However, there's blended learning is a term that we use to talk about using technology to increase the amount of face time our students can have with faculty. So our faculty want our students doing original work as quickly as possible.
How does online learning differ from these old-fashioned correspondence courses that people used to take in the early 20th century? I know it's electronic, but how is it different? Because those degrees, people who graduated from schools that were correspondence schools, were not regarded as highly as somebody who got a four-year degree from an academic institution which they actually attended.
I think it's important to make a distinguish between the educational experience that a place like Davidson offers in its totality and what you're talking about, which is the use of technology in the delivery of certain kinds of material. Mm-hmm. So if you think about a lecture course, increasingly there is adaptive learning technology that can assess while you're listening to the lecture through questions that you're asked, how you're learning, what you're getting, what you're not getting, and therefore personalize the experience of taking in content and mastering content online in a way that's difficult to do in a large lecture. That, to me, is something that all institutions will look at. When you're talking about the totality of the experience, our students come to Davidson to do brain surgery on rats with Julio Ramirez in his lab, or to build computers out of E. coli with Malcolm Campbell, or to write a play and produce it with Anne-Marie Costa, or to create a sculpture with Court Savage. They don't come to our campus mm-hmm. to learn stuff that they can read online. So I am both really fascinated by how technology can help us improve the education we offer our own students, and completely unthreatened by it because it will never substitute for the reason why, for the things that our students get at Davidson.
Is that where it's going in the next 10 years? You think at least some courses almost everywhere will be either taught by or supplemented by some sort of online situation?
Yes, because I think there will be instances where technology, I would just call it technology, makes education better.
Will that lower the cost?
It will for some things. It will.
Because you have said that a liberal arts education is an expensive one. In fact, you say it is always going to be very expensive and available to only a few people. Why is it so expensive?
It's expensive. I would say that the kind of education that we offer at Davidson, where the curriculum is based on students doing original work, and where the residential environment is there to help students build bridges between how they learn and how they live, that depends upon a particular student-faculty ratio. Our biggest costs are personnel costs. Our faculty are extraordinarily talented. They come to Davidson because they want to share their love of learning with their students. They want to engage their students pretty quickly in the quest for new knowledge, and that's expensive. It requires labs. It requires stages. It requires computers. And it requires really, really high-quality people, and a lot of them. And so when your average class size is 12, your labor costs are high.
Right.
We are never going to be able to make that cost less. Or I would say we're never going to be able to – I'm not going to be able to sort of radically reduce the expense of that. That said, technology will in the large scheme of things, make credentialing and certain kinds of education and certain kinds of learning much less expensive on a national and global scale.
Gary on Facebook writes, liberal arts at its core treats people as free individuals, as persons, and not as cogs, commodities, or even as societal resources. Well put. Agree with that?
I think liberal arts education focuses on educating the whole person. We pay attention to our students' emotional and spiritual and intellectual growth and give them opportunities to understand and to integrate the aspects of their selves into whole human beings. And I think that requires a particular kind of environment. So yes, I agree with that. I think that kind of education and that kind of philosophy exists at lots of places.
Put your headphones back on. We'll go back to the phones. And James in Charlotte, you're on WFAE.
Hello, guys. I just want to say thanks for having me on. And I was just curious, if it's going to be $250,000 debt, do you get to choose between having a house or having an education? Just want to leave that with you guys.
So I say you're saying it's not worth it?
I think it is worth education, and most schools to go. Davidson is one of the best schools around in this area. But I'm saying, I guess most people don't have that opportunity to go to college unless you have some wealthy parents to take care of the financial part of it. But when you get out of school, you get to choose to have an apartment, or are you going to be able to afford a house? Are you going to make that much money to choose to have either? Or, I mean, I'm not saying anything bad about education, but I'm saying it's way too high for most people.
Okay. Well, and we live in a culture that is materialistic, and they want the big house in the suburbs with the picket fence and the four bedrooms and 3.5 baths right out of school. That's not even a realistic dream to me. It's not. But then I grew up in a different environment. It seemed to me more valuable to come out of college with an education that could be applied to the rest of your life. Although there is this cost benefit analysis, is there a way to do that before you commit? Or should that in your mind as an academic, should that even be part of the discussion today?
I think it's important to think very carefully about where you attend college and how much money you need to borrow to make that choice. And at Davidson, we're need blind. We meet demonstrated need, and we do it without requiring loans. Therefore, we believe that we make it possible for students who are admitted to Davidson to attend. We also believe that the Davidson degree is sufficiently valuable both in terms of one's growth as an individual human being and in terms of one's career and life options that you will not regret attending Davidson. In fact, like 64% of our alumni, you will be grateful and give back to us and to your community after you leave. I can't speak for other institutions, but I can speak for Davidson.
Okay. Calvin in Charlotte, you're on WFAE. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to comment on the idea of smaller class sizes at institutions like Davidson. I'm a student at an Ivy League university, but I have three older siblings who've all attended small liberal arts schools like Davidson. And I wanted to comment on the idea that a school like Davidson, where the average class size is so small, the benefit of interacting so personally with your professors can, at a lot of times, make up for a lot of the other things you may feel are lacking, like, you know, giant resources at a big university. So I just wanted to hear your thoughts on that idea.
I think the faculty-student interaction and the quality of it at Davidson is extraordinary. And at Davidson, we're able to create a classroom environment where students are also doing original work. And so when you can offer students the opportunity to do original research or original creative work in an environment where the average class size is 12 and where there are no graduate students around competing for attention or time with faculty members, I think that is an extraordinary college education. And Davidson is one of the very few places in the country that we have the opportunity and the privilege of being able to offer that kind of education to our extremely talented students. So, yes, much of what students remember when they graduate is the close relationships with faculty members, and those relationships matter to the quality of the education we're able to offer.
Calvin, thank you for your call. Let me go to Gene, in Charlotte. Welcome, Gene.
Hello.
Hello, go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call. I'm a retired airline captain and a current certified flight instructor. I think with responsibilities to teach as much as any Davidson professor has, and I resent the illusion that a pilot in the Navy or the military is a better pilot just because they have a college degree in dance or theater.
Yeah, I would agree with that. If I gave the impression that
I think that came from a caller, didn't it, Gene?
No, that came from the professor.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no,
The other thing I'd like to make a comment on is the state of North Carolina. I'm also a real estate appraiser. I have no college degree. The state of North Carolina has recently instituted rules that a commercial appraiser like me has to have a 4-year college degree. And that's ridiculous. The North Carolina Dispute Resolution Commission recently modified its rules to say a person without a college degree cannot be a mediator because they're not credible. So I think the whole education process is being used to discriminate against certain people, and especially with North Carolina occupational laws.
Okay, talk about that.
I would agree with you that that the presumption that a college degree necessarily make someone better at a particular job is incorrect. And I I'm sorry if I gave the impression that that I thought pilots had to be theater or liberal arts majors. My intention was rather to suggest that an English major could be a pilot, not that other people couldn't be pilots. So I apologize if I gave that impression. And I think increasingly technology and other opportunities for learning what you need to know to be good at what you do, as you clearly are, will diminish the legitimacy of the claim that everybody has to have a college degree. I actually don't believe that. So I regret giving the wrong impression in my previous answer.
Is there something in your knowledge base going on behind the scenes at the governmental level that would cause a government institution to demand a four-year college degree, a diploma essentially, to be an appraiser or to be something else because they want to pump up or feed students into the public system, the public college system?
No. And I actually think nationally and globally we're moving in the other direction. I think employers are increasingly indifferent to a piece of paper and want to know the skills that you actually have.
Thank you for your call, Gene. We haven't talked about sports, and I didn't anticipate talking about it at all, except I know that you want to talk about Division I, which is Davidson's a member of, and you're playing schools like Duke and Carolina. And why is that important for that to be part of the package at Davidson?
I think our student athletes who are amazing individuals who are both fantastic students. We have one admissions process at Davidson, and so all of our student athletes are students first and have demonstrated a desire and a commitment to being at Davidson and to the academic rigor that we stand for. Our student athletes bring to our campus talents and skills that are valuable to everyone that are not always easy to learn in other contexts. So our student athletes are leaders. They're good at teamwork. They're resilient. They're self-disciplined. They've learned how to do multiple things really well. They understand the importance of suffering failure with dignity and getting up and going back to work the next day. And so I feel like they bring a set of talents and characteristics that enrich our campus very significantly. And I'm grateful for their presence, and I'm glad we're able to do it.
You're the first non-alumnus since 1957 to become president of Davidson College. And Philip writes, as an alumnus, that you're an absolute bullseye of a choice, despite the fact that you're not one. That's the Davidson tradition. Davidson College is big into self-examination. It works. Dr. Carol Quillen, president of Davidson College, thank you for the hour.
Thank you.